1, 2, 3. Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constance, in fact. I'm back from vacation. I was down in New Orleans helping my brother move up to college, something that actually ties in quite well into today's show, which is full of discussion, sports talk, so much to get to today. Al Martin is out in Los Angeles at the moment, but we're going to keep this train pushing. Jim Caldwell, head coach of the Detroit Lions, was actually named the least likely to be coach of the year. Quite an interesting find right there, and the Vegas betting odds and geniuses aren't necessarily favoring the Detroit Lions head coach, but I like him for maybe an upset if some conditions get right. However, we'll describe all of that in more detail later. Also, the big news coming out yesterday, the Big Ten released their conference schedules, painting a pretty clear picture of what this next year will look like for Michigan State, Michigan, and all the other Big Ten teams in the realm of college basketball. We'll talk about that, what the toughest stretches are, what changes we could see coming to college basketball in the Big Ten, and so much more. Michigan also on the cusp of signing a pretty big name. Find out who that is, as well as why he might be considering Big Blue later in the hour. Also, Marvin Bagley. You might have heard the name. Big five-star recruit who committed to Duke. Promise, it's not for next year. It's for this upcoming year. The NCAA has a big decision to make. And you guys know that when I'm away for this show, I always have some emotions simmer up inside of me, usually anger, and this will be my rant of the day. Marvin Bagley going to Duke seems a little bit unfair. I'll tell you how, and so much more. We also have Throwback Thursday on the docket. You won't want to miss when we reflect on all what happened on this day in sports and history. We've got that and so much more. It feels great to be back, and I'd like you to join me. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527, or go to Facebook Live and leave a comment. That's on our Facebook page, WKAR's Current Sports. Plus, drop me a line on Twitter, at Isaac Constance. But we've got a lot to get to. You know how we're going to start it off with your current sports quick hit headliners right now. The University of Michigan football team had some special guests yesterday at camp. Juwan Howard and Jimmy King, members of the Fab Five, were on hand at the team's practice facility. The two are in town this week for the Michigan Fab Five basketball camp with Jalen Rose and Ray Jackson. That's not the biggest news out of Michigan men's basketball. Stay tuned for more on that. And as training camp moves along for the Detroit Lions, there's one storyline that has made its way to the top of the list. Kenny Golladay, the receiver out of Northern Illinois and the Lions' third-round draft pick, began taking reps with the first-team offense. Golladay has been a huge bright spot in camp this year. In the Lions' first preseason game against the Indianapolis Colts, Golladay scored 2 touchdowns on 3 receptions, pairing that up with 53 yards. It's still way too early to tell, but it's looking like the Lions struck gold with that third-round draft pick. Michigan State men's basketball had its 2017-2018 schedule released on Wednesday. The schedule features 17 teams that appeared in the 2017 postseason, including 11 opponents that played in the NCAA tournament. In conference play, the Spartans will play Illinois, Indiana, Maryland, Rutgers, and Wisconsin twice, while hosting Michigan, Nebraska, Penn State, and Purdue, and traveling to Iowa, Minnesota, Northwestern, and Ohio State. The Spartans will play a pair of conference games in the middle of the non-conference slate in early December, hosting Nebraska on December 3rd and traveling to Rutgers on December 5th. After the conclusion of the non-conference schedule, the rest of it, I should say, Big Ten action resumes on January 4th with MSU hosting Maryland. MSU opens up their season on October 26th when they host Fair State. Just down the road in Ann Arbor, Michigan, Michigan will open their 2017-2018 season on November 3rd against Grand Valley State at the Chrysler Center. The out-of-conference schedule for the Wolverines is not easy by any stretch of the imagination, as they'll take on defending national champs North Carolina in the Big Ten ACC Challenge on November 29th. And after a short 2-game stint of Big Ten games against Indiana and Ohio State, the Wolverines will welcome UCLA to Ann Arbor on December 9th. And then just 3 games later, will travel to Austin, Texas to take on UT. The Wolverines open the rest of their Big Ten schedule on January 2nd versus Iowa. Michigan was also listed in the top 5 for 1 5-star recruits list. More on that later. One day after Tiger second baseman told umpire Angel Hernandez to find another job after Hernandez tossed Ian Kinsler from a game, the former Texas Ranger shook hands with the ump. Hernandez was working second base for the finale of the Tiger series against the Rangers when Kinsler took his position for the bottom of the first inning. The two appeared to share a few kind words this time before Hernandez walked up to Kinsler and shook his hand. Then he briefly put his hand on Kinsler's shoulder. Now, of course, that's all you can talk about for Detroit in a positive light, as the game itself was yet another L for the Tigers, as the Rangers went on to complete the 3-game sweep with a 12-6 victory. Just gets uglier and uglier by the day for the Detroit Tigers. On to some good news. 12-year-old J.C. Simon of St. John's competed in the World Dwarf Games in Ontario, Canada, and boy, did she win big. She claimed gold in her age class in doubles, badminton, and basketball, and standing at only 3'7", dominated on the track, winning the 40 and 60 meter runs and the 4x40 relay race. Simon took silver in singles, badminton, soccer, shot put, and discus, and earned a bronze in the javelin throw. More than 400 athletes representing 17 countries took part in the World Dwarf Games, the world's largest sporting event held exclusively for athletes with dwarfism. Modeled after the Olympics, little people of all ages take part in competitive events at different locations around the world every 4 years. A huge congrats on behalf of Current Sports to J.C. Simon for making the mid-Michigan area proud. And back in June, when Paul Perilla, the board chair of USA Gymnastics, was being deposed for one of many lawsuits filed against Larry Nassar, the former national team doctor who has been accused of sexually abusing gymnasts under the guise of medical treatment, he was asked if USA Gymnastics had settled with any victims in California. Perilla, an Orange County-based lawyer, did not answer the question. Now, an Olympian with knowledge of the case has told the Southern California News Group that USA Gymnastics had indeed settled the out-of-court cost with Nassar victims. That may constitute a violation of California law AB 2875, which states that a confidential settlement agreement is prohibited in any civil action, the factual foundation for which establishes a cause of action for civil damages for an act that may be prosecuted as a felony sex offense. It also strongly suggests that USA Gymnastics was trying to keep the public from learning the full scope of Nassar's abuses against gymnasts. Last but certainly not least, NBA reporter Chris Sheridan was hot on the trail of LeBron James when the superstar was rumored to be taking his talents to Miami in 2014, calling it a 90% chance that he would leave for South Beach. Well, Sheridan came out with another tweet yesterday that read, NBA source today, this will be LeBron's final season in Cleveland. He is 100% leaving. Relationship with owners beyond repair. You better believe we'll have more on that story and more later on in the hour. Keep it tuned to AM 870 as we just finish up our quick hit headliners. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-WKAR to discuss any of those comments, or leave us a comment at my Twitter, at Isaac Constance, at WKAR_sports, or on our Facebook live stream. We've got a lot to get to. Let's start the show.
Christian Miller.
Oh, I don't know. You know, you guys make all these predictions about everything, about guys that are going to be great players that have been here for 2 years and who's going to win all the games. And I don't even know why we play. Why do we even play? Why do we even have practice? Why do we compete? Why do we coach guys? How do they need to improve? I mean, you guys got all the answers to, I mean, how guys are going to be, what they're going to do. Sometimes I wonder, why do we play? I mean, why do we even have practice? Because you guys got all these conclusions already drawn about who's what, how good they are, what they can do. I mean, so why would you ask me? I mean, that's a part that's puzzling to me. Why would you ask me? I mean, I read stuff all the time like, oh, that's nice to know. I mean, where'd that come from? And then you ask me? But Christian Miller has done a nice job. He's had a really good camp. He's doing a good job. I mean, had a lot of production points in the scrimmage. So we're really happy with his progress. And, you know, thanks for asking.
Former Michigan State coach and now Alabama coach with a few championships to his name. Yeah, you know who it is. Nick Saban. Also, finishing off the week on a good note. It's Thursday today in Studio S at WKAR Studios. My name's Isaac Constance. Phone in for Al Martin. And every single time Nick Saban opens his mouth at a media member, you have a feeling there might be some bite to it. a little bit of displeasure from Saban over the fact that he feels media members jump the gun too much. Fake news, not as he calls it, but that certainly has been the theme of the United States quite recently. And Nick Saban buying into that. When asked about what Christian Miller, a junior outside linebacker for the Crimson Tide, could contribute to the team next year, Nick Saban didn't really answer the question.
Gone.
Yeah. He was more gone on another topic, we should say. Nick Saban, boy, he always has a rant in store. And on this one, he thought that the media, myself included, Al self included, engineer for the day, Jacob Herbert self included, we all jump the gun. We all make way too many predictions. And why even play the season? Well, as Jacob informed me beforehand, you play to win the game, right? I'm wondering, it's funny. Everybody tells me I've got an accent, a southern accent. I'm from New Orleans. I don't totally hear it. I don't think it sounds like Nick Saban. Maybe it does a little bit on certain words. I don't know. But the thing is, Nick Saban, this guy just loves stirring up the pot before the season starts. And his team's got so much attention. I get it. Sometimes you want to break away from the media firestorm that ensues before the college football season, where every single one of your players is covered in a feature. Every single game is analyzed before we know if there's any injury, suspension, coaching change that occurs before that game that could dramatically shift its outcome. But nonetheless, the media, we do try to seize on anything we can get. But this was a relatively innocuous question. What can outside linebacker Christian Miller contribute to the team this year? And apparently, he can contribute a pretty good answer to an interviewer's question. That's for sure. Anyway, you're listening to Current Sports on WKAR. A lot to get to today. And the big news breaking yesterday was not out of that former Michigan State man, but it was out of the Big Ten Conference and individual schools that released their basketball schedules for the upcoming season. Michigan State and Michigan included, so why not? We're based in East Lansing, let's start with the Spartans. But first, a few Big Ten notes in general, because this is a season of first for Big Ten teams. For the first time ever, the Big Ten tournament will be played in Madison Square Garden in the NYC, and it's moved up by a week. So what does that mean for scheduling in general? Well, two games for all teams will be moved up to the front of December, the first weekend to be exact. One will be a home game, one will be a road game. And that doesn't matter who it is, as long as you play in the Big Ten, that is the case. So nobody's disadvantaged within the conference, at least because of that. As you might remember, however, usually Big Ten play starts right in January, maybe even some games lingering, hanging on to the end of December. But usually the bulk of it comes in January, of course, carries over into February. The conference tournaments start off March Madness and so on and so forth. Well, the conference tournament this time will be played a week earlier. Because it's in Madison Square Garden, they got to give the Knicks a chance to play on their home court as well. So this is the only time they could make it work. They did. All the league's men's and women's teams will fit in 16 games for the 55 days between January 2nd and February 25th. Each team will still have 18 conference games per the use. Northwestern will play its entire home schedule at the Allstate Arena in Rosemont, Illinois this winter, the result of ongoing renovation of their usual campus home, the Welsh Ryan Arena. But because they are not Allstate's primary user, the Big Ten estimated that the Wildcats could only give the Big Ten about one-third of those 55 days for a potential home game, so they had to squeeze in a couple for Northwestern. Quite a good team heading into this upcoming year. There are four, 34, excuse me, instances of single-day prep games between men's and women's games. In previous seasons, the conference avoided having teams play more than two consecutive road games. That all goes out the window this year, although not either for Michigan State or Michigan, as I checked. But some teams will have to play three in a row away from home. I expect Northwestern, especially having that crunch schedule, to be one of the wild cards within the Big Ten. They'll be pretty interesting to watch. They lost almost no big players. In fact, I think just one player from the entire team. Minnesota, of course, after losing last season to Middle Tennessee State. Wonder if that is deja vu for anybody listening. Yeah, Minnesota, though, they'll be pretty good, too. Not losing too many players and actually having a pretty decent recruiting class under Patino the Younger. Purdue also should be very good. Haas and Vince Edwards both returning. Iowa, Michigan, I've got some questions about them, but both teams have the potential to do something. They've got a lot of good players. They've got a lot of absences, too. Iowa is just one big name, but he was one of the best scorers in the country. Peter Jacques, of course, I'm talking about. In Michigan, they lost quite a little bit, but at the same time, got some good players coming in the form of Isaiah Livers, amongst others. Michigan, they could be good next year. They'll need new players to step up. Wisconsin, Happ will have to carry this team. He was big last year. He was their best player. But on some games, the inexperience did shine through. So we'll see what he can do this upcoming year. But expect a big year from Ethan Happ. He's going to need one, and they'll probably get one this upcoming year. Now, on to Michigan State, on to the locals. Schedule starts off pretty easy for the Spartans. Like I mentioned, that weekend in December, the first weekend in December, there will be, for every Big Ten team, two games in conference. For Michigan State, that entails a home game against Nebraska on December 3rd and an away game against Rutgers on December 5th. We're not going to do full previews right now, but that's a favorable start to the year. Nebraska lost Ty Webster, their star leading scorer, plus a guy who could just create passes and create opportunities, buckets for teammates such as Ed Morrow, who's also on his way out because of his ability to penetrate the paint and his senior experience. Great leadership from Ty Webster. He's gone. And as I mentioned, Ed Morrow is gone too. They only added one name to their roster. So a lot of old heads, but not necessarily the ones you'd want. I don't think Nana Akenton is going to make an instant impact. He wasn't really a highly touted recruit for them. So Nebraska versus MSU, that game shapes up quite nicely for the Spartans, especially considering that the Spartans will have a lot of games under their belt, and that'll be a game held at the Breslin Center. Then MSU goes away to Rutgers on December 5th. That's a win. MSU's 1-0 already. Athletics, whether that be football or basketball or whatever else you may have, Rutgers will not stand a chance against the Spartans. That goes into what I think could actually be a more different and difficult non-conference schedule in Oakland and Cleveland State, amongst others. The Spartans will have some gimmicks in that schedule, but at the same time, Oakland and Cleveland State are not easy wins for the Spartans. In fact, I think those could be more difficult games than both Nebraska and Rutgers. The key stretch for the Spartans will be in February when they go at Indiana, at Iowa, return home for one game against Purdue. Then they travel to Minnesota and wrap that five-game stretch up at Northwestern. As I said, who's itinerant this year playing in a borrowed arena. But MSU, they don't have a bad schedule. Spartan fans, if I were you, I would in fact rejoice. I think this is a very favorable schedule for the Michigan State Spartans, as when they return to the Big Ten, they are home, part of a four-game homestand against Maryland, losing Mel Tremble and a couple of other players. Maryland, they're a little bit rocky going into this next year. Then MSU goes at Ohio State, then hosts Rutgers before hosting Michigan, the one game that those two will play this year. Those games resuming on January 4th. And the schedule that I mentioned, the stretch of the season that I think will be vital for MSU locking up a top seed in the tournament, that starts in February. Over the course of 14 days, MSU plays five games, meaning some of those will be on just 3 days rest. Indiana, then Iowa, both of those away. Purdue at home, that's on February 10th, that's a Saturday. Then they travel to Minnesota, then Northwestern to wrap up that stretch. Saturday the 17th, again in February. The Big Ten tournament will start Wednesday, February 28th. Like I said, that's a week earlier than usual. The good news for MSU and all other Big Ten teams is that with the Big Ten tournament starting earlier, if you're playing in the NCAA tournament, you've got a full week of rest, baby. The the NCAA tournament, rather, does not start until the 13th and 14th. That means 10 days, and that's the first four, meaning that the first and second rounds don't actually begin until March 15th. That's 11 days of rest minimum for the Spartans and any other Big Ten teams that will qualify for the tournament. Now going across the road to Ann Arbor, Michigan, like I said, I think they've got the potential to do some big things this upcoming year with their team. Mo Wagner, of course, returning. Xavier Simpson could be quite an interesting player. I expect him to get upwards of 20 minutes a game for the Wolverines and be an X factor on that squad. Muhammad Ali Abdur-Rahman, we know, can shoot lights out. Can he do it himself without the distributing capabilities of a Derek Walton Jr., who also sparked the fast break for the Wolverines last year, who were so dependent on those quick run-and-gun threes, as well as Walton getting to the basket and, again, forcing the defense to collapse before kicking it out to other teammates. Well, Charles Matthews, that transfer I mentioned, he's from Kentucky. He could be quite a big player for Michigan next year. He averaged 10 minutes a game on Kentucky. That isn't bad. And then Isaiah Livers coming in as a power forward could be quite a good player too. Michigan starts off their season again in that first weekend of December versus Indiana. Then they travel to Ohio State. That's a lot harder than the start of the season for MSU. But at the same time, Michigan coming off a hot year, full of upset success, winning the Big Ten tournament. And the good news for them is I see two really difficult stretches in their schedule as opposed to just one for the Spartans. Of course, those teams only face off once this year, and it's at the Breslin Center in East Lansing. Unfortunate for the Wolverines, and both John Beilein and Tom Izzo making their thoughts clear on why that's a bad idea. Welcome to the club. All the fans, all the commentators, every single analyst agrees with those coaches. But Michigan, they've got two very difficult schedules. That's January 2nd to 15th and January 25th to February 11th. From that first schedule, the 2nd to the 15th, they play Iowa first. That's an away game. Then they host Illinois, host Purdue, travel to MSU, and then they go over to Maryland. Decent bit of traveling in that schedule. but at the same time, not too hard of teams. The thing is, that is starting off your Big Ten schedule, having to play both Purdue and Michigan State after resuming play from your non-conference schedule after that brief hiatus. That's difficult. Then they've got another tough stretch starting on January 25th where they play Purdue. That's an away game. They're unfortunate enough to have two against the Boilermakers before hosting Northwestern, hosting Minnesota, then traveling to Northwestern and traveling to Wisconsin. Like I said, Ethan Happ will be the X factor for that team. We'll see what he can do. But at Northwestern, that's a difficult setup before that game. Northwestern's definitely a team that can grind you down, especially when you lost DJ Wilson. Mo Wagner's your only big guy who conceivably can play big minutes for you if you're the Wolverines. That's tough. Now, the other news I brought to the forefront of this show was that Michigan might have some help on the way. Not for this year, but for the class of 2018. RJ Barrett is a five-star recruit. In fact, he's a 6'6 shooting guard from Canada. He goes to Monteverde, Florida right now, kind of the same place that Ben Simmons, of course, the former number one overall pick in the NBA draft, came from. And Michigan joins Arizona, Duke, Oregon, and Kentucky atop his list of schools he considered. He's narrowing it down to those five. Michigan in the running for a five-star shooting guard. I think this guy would be a perfect fit for their squad, especially as after next year, they'll lose even more talent either to the draft or otherwise. Michigan could really make room, and there's no question to me why Michigan's on this list. They're obviously the ugly duckling when it comes to Arizona, Duke, Oregon, and Kentucky, but Michigan's a little bit closer to Canada. Don't think that that doesn't play a part. If they got RJ Barrett, though, it's a ways away. It's probably not going to happen, Wolverine fans. But at the same time, this is something to get excited about, because this guy could eventually in the future, be a Player of the Year candidate. He is that good. So get a little bit excited, just not too excited. Our engineer for the day, Jacob Herbert, I want to get your opinion on the schedule for both of those teams, especially when it comes to MSU. Are you ready for the basketball season to resume? And you think the Spartans have it easy, tough? What do you think?
I think it's going to be kind of hard to tell, because obviously they have the talent with all these. But you and I were talking earlier before the show started. They still have these new guys coming in, and it's going to be interesting to see how they all gel together, especially with Jaren Jackson and Xavier Tillman. Excuse me. We spent a lot of time watching Jaren Jackson play at the Moneyball Summer League, and he still looks like he has a bit of a way to go. Obviously, as a talent, that's why Izzo recruited him. That's why he's here. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, how Izzo is able to gel. I have no, you know, doubt in my mind that he's going to be able to do it. He's a Hall of Fame coach, but I think it might be a little bit of, they do have an easy, you know, I think we were talking five games stretch to start the season, that could, you know, they play some pretty weak competition by their standards. I think that could be, you know, that's going to be an important, as easy as those games are, it's going to be an important stretch for this team to kind of gel together. But yeah, I mean, obviously they're ranked, you know, in the top five in pretty much every poll. And those guys who make those polls know a lot better than me. But it's going to be interesting to see how you know, they all gel together. And I think those five games will be crucial for that.
And that's one thing about the Big Ten schedule starting early. Obviously, MSU not taking the easy road out whatsoever, traveling to Portland to play in that tournament. They start off against DePaul, and depending who they beat or who they lose to, they could face different opposition. But Oregon's in that one. A couple other national championship contenders are in that tournament. MSU's got a tough schedule. And of course, you can't forget against Duke. That game kind of kicking off the season for the Spartans. They've got a few warm-ups before that one. But at the same time, Duke is right there glaring at you, staring at you in the face. And we'll talk about what made Duke a little bit more intimidating this week later on in the show. But MSU, they did luck out with this schedule. Spartan fans rejoice because you started off with Nebraska, Rutgers, Maryland, Ohio State, Rutgers. I think at the end of the season, max two teams might have a record that's above 500. So MSU, you got it off easy. Rejoice, take it easy. And as bad as this new Big Ten format is for some teams with those two games coming before the real schedule ensues for the Big Ten, for MSU, like I said, they caught a break. It's actually a nice warm-up for the rest of the non-conference schedule before they really break into the difficult stuff. Let's hit our first break. And coming out of that, like you heard me say, Duke bolstering their college basketball squad. I wouldn't be talking about it. That's a long ways away. But this is big news. Also, Jim Caldwell sitting at the very bottom of Coach of the Year candidates. We'll explain why that might be coming back on WKAR's Current Sports. I'm digging it, Jacob. Some Lord. All right. One of those artists that I actually like. More of a hip-hop guy myself. As you know, I also like a little bit of punk rock way back in the day. But Lord's one of those artists who just transcends music. She appeals to everybody. My basketball team in high school, I'm not kidding you, used to bump Lord before games. We actually used to play Lord on the school bus. My friend KJ, it was his favorite music. So I like that selection. You a big Lord fan?
I am. Her new album, I would definitely recommend it if you haven't listened to it yet. Melodrama just came out a month ago, maybe a little more than a month ago. That first track that we played going into the break was called Green Lights off that album. It was the first single she released. But yeah, definitely a big Lord fan.
Oh yeah, Lord is just fantastic. Now, somebody who's not feeling too fantastic after these ratings came out. Boy, he gets so much hate. And I just don't get it. I do to an extent, I should say. Jim Caldwell, Detroit Lions coach, obviously has not been the most compelling figure. He doesn't give you any colorful rants before games. In fact, he's one of the blandest coaches in the game when it comes to insight on the podium, but he wins. He's no Nick Saban in either rants or wins, but he does win. His first year with the Colts, 14-2. Now, his last year, when Andrew Luck entered the NFL with the Colts, he was 2-14. So
he also had Peyton Manning in his first year, too. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't care who you are. When you've gotten Peyton Manning, you're going to look like a pretty good coach.
But Peyton Manning, at the end of his career in Indianapolis, too, wasn't necessarily the Peyton Manning of old. That 14-2
still Peyton Manning. He's still got the football brain. I don't care how old he is and how many surgeries he has.
No, I hear you. That 14-2 year, he was the same Peyton Manning. But eventually, he did start declining. Like you said, the neck surgeries and everything. And when he was on the Broncos, Peyton Manning was a bottom five starting quarterback in the NFL. That is not a bold statement. Check the stats. He had all the intangibles down, but that's aside the point because, of course, Jim Caldwell had Andrew Luck. Actually, in my opinion, cultivated him pretty well, just like he did Matthew Stafford, but he had a three-year hiatus from coaching in the NFL, came on over to Detroit, 11-5 his first year, then 7-9. Calvin Johnson retires, 9-7 the following season, and that 7-9 year was such a historically bad start to the season. He really took momentum in some ways. I was impressed with that year just because the Lions started off that year about the worst way imaginable. Then last season, they kind of tanked at the end of it. Of course, losing the playoff game to the Seahawks, I believe 26-6 was the final score of that one. But at the same time, Caldwell has been the most winning Lions coach through three games in recent memory, and he gets a lot of hate. Most recently, on the betting booths, according to Bovada, Jim Caldwell has the lowest likelihood, the worst odds of any coach in the NFL to win Coach of the Year. And the reason why is pretty simple to me. Career record of 53-43. That's good. That's not great. The Detroit Lions last year, 9-7, didn't improve too much. In fact, I think in some ways they took a step back on that defensive side. I think they have a shortage of serviceable linebackers that they can throw in. Of course, DeAndre Levy, no more. Plus Kyle Van Noy on the Patriots, tearing it up for them. But the Detroit Lions stupidly released him. However, the Detroit Lions, they did make strides on the offensive line. It's a shame Teyard Eckers hurt, but I did read this morning that TJ Lang is back in practice, the big signing from Green Bay over the course of this offseason. Somebody who hopefully can lend Matthew Stafford a little bit of support, a little bit of time to throw on that offensive line. I think the Lions could improve next year. More than likely, I think they actually keep that same record, 9-7, and that's why his chances of being Coach of the Year are so low. Going from 9-7, even if you win 12 games, even if you win 13, which I don't think will happen, it's not impossible, but it probably won't happen, that's not that big of a jump. Other coaches are going to lead their teams up the ladder dramatically. Bill Belichick is top of the list. Obviously, he can't lead them up too much of the standings. But Ron Rivera has the fourth best odds, 12-1. Mike McCarthy, the third best odds, 10-1. For those teams of those caliber, a lot of room for improvement. For the Lions, I'm not sure if the talent's there in order to ascend that same level. Now, Bill Belichick, like I said, not much room for improvement, but at the same time, if he were to win it this year, he would tie Don Shula for the most Coach of the Year awards in NFL history. It's the Popovich syndrome. I can't believe he doesn't have it already, just because this is a guy who's obviously earned that distinction. The Patriots, with Matt Castle, were a good team. I brought it up, Tom Brady. This is a testament to his greatness, but also to Bill Belichick's, with Reach Caldwell. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that name because he's not a notable football player. He's an average guy off the streets who, besides with Bill Belichick, was no more than a third receiver on a football team. With him as the Patriots' top receiver, they got to a 12-4 record. I believe they made a Super Bowl in that time span. Unbelievable. He sustained success for so long. He knows every position. He's another guy like Jim Caldwell, who for media members has to be a total snore to cover. But at the same time, he's successful. He's effective. You can't really question his methods because the byproducts are so perfect. Bill Belichick, with the win in the Coach of the Year standings, would have four, again, tying Don Shula for the most of all time. Now, my dark horse for that pick, if you're going to throw some money on it, which I don't recommend, who bets on Coach of the Year? Seriously, that's a totally odd choice to spend your money, especially when it's a league that you've got teams like the Carolina Panthers the year after making the Super Bowl absolutely sucking all of the air out of the room with a subpar performance. And you've got teams that usually do great things who are underappreciated because their greatness is normalized by their previous years. I mean, don't ask me why people would bet on Coach of the Year, but if you're going to, Jim Caldwell is not a bad bet. And it's because the Lions do have explosive potential. When you have a great quarterback like Matthew Stafford, there's a way. There is a way to the top. Now, unfortunately for the Lions, same old story. It's a tough division. the Vikings are not a bad team. And I thought that they made positive moves in this offseason by distancing themselves from the Adrian Peterson train. It's a new era. They recognize that. They're owning in with Zimmer on defense. I really like the movements of them. And it's the Green Bay Packers, of course, who you always have to contend with. They're not going anywhere. But the Lions do have big time potential. Kenny Galloway is one of those players who you might not have heard of before, but that's the great thing about receivers. Julius Thomas became such an effective tight end in the National Football League. Nobody had heard of him before. He was a basketball player, just like Antonio Gates, just like Jimmy Graham. All of those players going on to be stars, Pro Bowl players in the NFL. These tall, lanky guys with good hands, that's receiving. There's not much more to it than that. That is what Kenny Galloway appears to be for the Detroit Lions. And when you have a red zone threat, somebody who can force defenses away from guys like Marvin Jones, Golden Tate, then it opens the field up. When Decker returns, the Detroit Lions will have a pretty respectable offensive line for the first time in years. Matthew Stafford is a top 10 quarterback in the NFL, and he's a little bit higher than that. I don't have the time to compile a whole list, but Matthew Stafford can make things happen in the red zone, especially at this point in his career. He's refined his accuracy a bit. So, no, the Lions will not do much better than they did last year, probably. Like I said, that linebacking core is weak. But at the same time, Jim Caldwell does not deserve to be the lowest rated coach in the football league when it comes to coach of the year odds. That's absurd. Another dark horse, I like Anthony Lynn going to San Diego. I think he's a really good fit there. I saw him on NFL Network. Very well spoken, but also a motivator. He'll get his guys going. And I like the move San Diego has made this offseason too. I think that they will be a force in the AFC. Not do anything like win it, but I think they do end the regular season with a pretty good record. Jacob, when it comes to Jim Caldwell, obviously this is a divisive matter for Lions fans. I don't think it should be. What do you think about him as a coach?
I don't think he's a terrible coach.
Exactly, though. His success says that he's a good coach.
I think he's a good coach. Okay. I think he's from a media standpoint, kind of annoying to cover. He doesn't really ever give you answers. And, you know, he's famous for kind of getting into little scruffs, not physical, but, you know, with reporters.
Of course.
But I don't, you made the point, the Packers being, you know, still being the cream of the crop in the NFC North. And I would kind of caution that, because I would argue that without Aaron Rodgers, I think they're a 6-win football team. I don't think they're that great.
Fair.
You got to look at what they lost. They lost TJ Lang. They lost Eddie Lacy. They're receiving.
Lacy was past his prime, though. Lacy put on a lot of weight.
He's also lost a lot of weight, though. And
we'll see how that
they don't have the point. They don't have much of a running game. You know, without Lacy, their receivers, other than, you know, Jordy Nelson, I don't know who really could step up in that group. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers is just like Tom Brady in the sense that he can make a no-name guy, you know, an MVP candidate. And they also lost TJ Lang to the Lions. So yep. I think they've lost a lot. And I think Aaron Rodgers really saves that team more than people might realize.
I think he does too. At the same time, though, I think the Packers still are the guys to beat when it comes to that division. I don't see the NFC North having another poster boy or another poster team besides the Packers, if only for their sustained success. You're right. They did lose some going into this offseason, but I don't hate the team. I think they could still be decent.
As a Detroit Lions, you know, as a Detroit native, I do not like the Packers. I do not like Aaron Rodgers.
I've heard that before.
Can't deny his greatness. But I think if the Lions were completely healthy, I mean, this is a big if. We can talk about hypotheticals for, you know, more than the hour this show allows us. But I think if the Lions, you know, didn't lose Kerry Hyder and they still had Brandon Copeland, the Decker injury didn't happen, I think that this team arguably would be better than the Packers, if not on the same level.
I think they'd definitely be on the same level. But again, injuries into consideration, The Lions, I think it'll take them a few weeks to find their footing before they can really succeed this season. Anyway, call in 517-355-9527 if you care to differ, or if you want to weigh in on anything we're talking about today. We're going to hit our final break. Coming out of that, though, still plenty. Throwback Thursday, amongst others, and I've got a little bit of a rant on Marvin Bagley going to Duke. It's not why you think, but again, I'm going to go into the NCAA and all their problems coming out of the break. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constance. We just got done chatting about Jim Caldwell, the Detroit Lions, and right before that, the schedules of Michigan State and University of Michigan. Still time for a short call if you want. 517-355-9527. 517-355-WKAR. But to end the show, there was a story earlier in the week that caught my eye and irritated me. It really was aggravating to see how much leniency the NCAA allows in certain situations that obviously affect people's lives more so than just that player, and yet they won't let a kid have a YouTube channel. Yeah, of course I'm talking about Donald De La Haye right there, but Marvin Bagley is going to Duke. He reclassified. He has not been approved just yet. So word of caution, he might not be able to play this season, but in prior circumstances such as Andre Drummond, who reclassified around a similar time now 6 years ago, the NCAA did permit it, so we'll see what they do here. But Marvin Bagley, the number one overall prospect in the class of 2018, just reclassified to the class of 2017 and committed his future on a SportsCenter special to Duke. Now, here's why this is problematic. Duke, from Tuesday, when he signed, has 2 weeks until classes. This is a student athlete, and I just got back from New Orleans moving my brother up to school. I'm a college student currently. I can tell you it takes a heck of a lot longer than 2 weeks to prepare for a semester long of school. Now, do I care about what grades Marvin Bagley makes? No, I couldn't care less. He couldn't care less. He's going to the NBA draft, going to be the number one pick as expected now in this upcoming season in the NBA draft class of 2018. Who cares about grades? I don't. You don't. Marvin don't. It doesn't matter what this guy makes in class. But the NCAA, every single thing they preach is under the pretense, the false pretense of it helping a student athlete. 2 weeks before school, however, a guy is allowed to suddenly go to college. He's a Phoenix area prospect, has to move across the country, and he's coming over. Now, the previous latest commit date by a consensus number one prospect was in 2013 on May 14th. May 14th, not August 14th or 15th, I should say, with Marvin Bagley going to Duke. May 14th, when Andrew Wiggins picked Kansas. That was 110 days before September 1st of his freshman season when class started for them. Last year's top recruit, Josh Jackson, who also went to Kansas, who apparently has good luck with a bunch of these guys, was 143 days prior. Ben Simmons was 687 days, more than a full year, close to two, before the start of his school. This is the latest reason I hate the NCAA's policy. And like I said, it's not because this kid needs class. It's because, once again, it shows the total paradox that they present of helping these student athletes by sending them to college. It's a money-making technique. This kid will get approved because they want the money now. Of course they do, but he won't get paid to play. Instead, he'll go to Duke, bounce to the NBA draft earlier, and I'd do the same thing if I were him. But for all of the attention he brings in, Duke already had 6 enrollees. They enrolled on July 3rd, a full month and more before Marvin Bagley committed. Alex O'Connell, Jordan Tucker, who will be competing for playtime as a 4-star recruit, as a small forward, Jordan Goldwire, Gary Trent Jr., Wendell Carter, the number 7 player in the nation, who, by the way, happens to play the same position as Marvin Bagley, Trevon Duval, and now Marvin Bagley are all incoming freshmen going to Duke. Wendell Carter made his commit long, long ago, and he had a good situation coming over to Duke. They're, of course, losing plenty of prospects, but guess where else he got offers from who were losing plenty of prospects? UK, University of Kentucky, and UNC, who could definitely use a big man after Kennedy Meeks went to the NBA. Would he still have chosen Duke after deciding in November of 2016 if he knew that the number one player in the nation who plays the exact same position were going to go right over to North Carolina, Durham, to play with them at Cameron Indoor? Probably not. This guy wants to go one and done too, I'm sure. As every student athlete with ambitions of being a lottery pick should, in my mind. But the one time the NCAA should actually step in and say, dude, sorry, you're 2018, it's already decided, too late. They don't, and now other athletes have to suffer for it. And again, it's just to make a little bit of extra money via viewing numbers and viewing attendance. Whatever. I was annoyed. But that's it for the day. Just 30 seconds left. Thank you so much for tuning in to WKAR's Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constance. I'll be hosting tomorrow as well for Al Martin while he's out of town. And we've got a stacked show there talking Detroit Pistons schedule with James Edwards of the Lansing State Journal and more. Keep it locked to WKAR AM 870 and 94.5 FM.